you need to answer who's paying for what. And that's why you always need to find a solution. And as we started as a first, as a pioneer by doing it, we have a unique selling proposition, how we call it. Yeah? And if a surgeon can work with each device from competitors or from Johnson & Johnson, it is a big game changer for him. Okay, your device will be is going to be recycled in the end. Then I decide for your product. And that was very helpful in the beginning. It was a big driver.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Welcome back to Irresistible Circular Businesses, the series that showcases the business practices that deliver irresistible commercial and circular results. We look at examples from different industries across different R strategies. Sponsoring partner of this series is Indeed Innovation. Indeed Innovation is the global design and innovation firm pioneering the circular economy and driving initiatives like in MedTech, the White Dot, a coalition that is transforming medical waste into valuable resources. In each episode, a member of the Indeed Innovation team will join me as a co-host. The last episode in the series with Ritra explored the importance of circular product design, modularity, and the role of dealers for a circular business. In this episode, we will take you to the medical sector, an industry that is shaped by high hygienic standards and intense regulation. We will look into take-back as an instrument to drive sales and get access to secondary materials. But before we start, I have an offer for you. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this conversation, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Today's guest studied economics and has an MBA in healthcare management. He worked for over 15 years for Johnson & Johnson, including leadership roles in commercial management. Since nearly 3 years, he is the Environmental Sustainability Manager for Johnson & Johnson MedTech Germany. As a key expert in circularity within the medical field, he drives sustainable clinical pathways and MedTech environmental strategy. Welcome, Daniel.
Hello, Patrick. Nice to meet you, Rio.
And I'm not alone. We are not alone. Today's Indeed co-host is Michael. Michael has an academic background in chemical engineering. He worked for Manager Magazine, Harvard Business Manager, and founded his own media startup. For more than 7 years, he is now with Indeed Innovation. As an executive director, he helps companies to develop circular strategies and business models and the use of AI for circularity. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Michael, Daniel, we always start with a personal question. When was the last time that you've been in a surgery room?
Should I start, Michael? It's quite a long time ago. Of course, I started as a sales rep and in Johnson & Johnson, as you mentioned before, for 15 years approximately. And that was my daily business to be in the OR. But switching to the environmental sustainability manager role, that is quite a long time ago that I was in the OR. But I'm really close to several customers and I know what is going on in the OR very well.
Okay. Michael, what about you? Any experience?
Yes, it was during my military service. So I was there in the medical division and there I had some duties in this area. This was the last time.
Okay.
It's quite a while ago.
I'm happy that you came up with these kind of stories and not any personal surprises here. We want to stick to this ecosystem, but look at it for more from a circular perspective and also look at the products that are used there and also are discarded there. Johnson & Johnson does run a collection system. How does this look like, Daniel?
It's quite simple, as you always do at home. I hope so that you're doing, that you're separating waste at home between paper and plastic and household. And it's not different if when you're talking about the medical products take-back system. UR stuff is needs to separate our instruments from the rest of the devices which are used in the UR, and then they put it into the bin. And once these bins are full, they can arrange a pickup service by our partner Resourcify. And then these bins are going to the not to the recycling partner. That's that's forbidden. And before we recycle these instruments, we need to decontaminate them, and that we are doing with a German partner here as well. And then they were sterilized. And after that, quite a lot of volume is sterilized. All these clean devices are go to the recycling partner, and then they were recycled on site.
And what kind of regions are we talking about?
We started in Germany in 2020, and we were the first country. We're next to New Zealand. New Zealand started in 2019. And as we started here in Germany, we scaled very fast in the other European-based countries. And meanwhile, we have recycling programs in 13 countries within the EU. And very proud to say that we are also have the first pilot now running in California.
Nice. And just to be sure, are you taking only products from Johnson & Johnson, or are you also covering other manufacturers?
Unfortunately, not yet, but that's the plan on the vision for the future. Currently, we are only able to take back our own products that have several reasons. The first one is costs. As we started in 2020, I was surprised about the price you need to pay for recycling something. You can say it is more expensive to recycle a medical product than to incinerate it. And that's the strategy in total that we are talking about later, maybe. And that is the first reason about cost, because someone needs to pay the bill in the end for the service. And the second one is, of course, we are currently working with a very small decontamination service, which is not able to scale it automatically. Servers, you need to separate all the devices by hand. But we have engineered a new process for 3 years ago, I think it was, and we are ready to scale it. But unfortunately, we are not allowed because we have some strict regulations here in place, which are hindering us to scale it here in Germany, at least. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Interesting. So what are the main reasons why hospitals sign up to these programs?
As I started as a sales rep, actually, I can say, I was myself aware of all the volume of waste which is generally doing the OR days. And I think that's the same for hospitals. Everybody who's working in the OR can see all the waste which is generated during the day. And it was my first aha moment, as we say in German. It was my waking up moment. And to say, okay, guys, unfortunately, of course, we have great products and we help a lot of patients and all the surgeons we are serving for. But in the end, we are part of the problem. I started to think about, okay, guys, let's look. We need to find a solution. We need to arrange or set up a take-back system for these products and recycle them in the end, that we can decrease the environmental footprint of this product.
Are there some cost or profit positions that are improved then by that, so that the hospitals have a another advantage beside the topic that waste is reduced or incineration costs are prevented?
Of course. I think they have two good arguments to participate on this program. The first one, as you mentioned, of course, the more they collect and take back to the supplier, the less they have the volume, or they can decrease their volume of waste, at least in the end. That's the first. The second one is that they also, when they are participating in our program, it's not only about recycling itself, it's also about that they're getting reports, how many devices they collected, what kind of material is getting back into the loop, how many devices we could avoid from incinerating in the end. That's another one. They can use all these data for their own sustainability reports. And last but not least, it's about costs. And yes, of course, the more they can avoid in waste, the more they can save money in the end for their own reports.
Mm-hmm. Is it also about making processes a little bit leaner internally, or is that not?
No, leaner, I would not say that's the topic. But it's also not also about not leaner, and it's also not more work for them to do. That's the first thing when we present our programs to the OR. The first question is, okay, have we more work with that, with doing that? And we say, no, guys, you're doing the same like you do every day. And there are, the only thing you need to keep in mind is, okay, there's another bin and you need to separate and keep in mind which kind of products are going into this green bin and which one not. And that's the only thing they need to keep in mind. I think that's it. That's very easy. That was very important for us as well, because we know the workload within the UR, and it was very important for us that we do not make so much pressure and too much more work for the UR stuff.
Just to make clear here, sorry, UR, not everyone might be familiar with that. What do you mean by UR?
OR? The OR, the operation room.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Just to make...
Hey, all right. Totally. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's the operation room where all the surgeries are taking place every day. Not the OR, the operation room.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Let's look at the other side of this table. So what drives Johnson & Johnson to run this collection system? What are your benefits?
Yeah. As I mentioned, it was a personal ambition to start with this program, to feel, to have an own a meaningful job, to say, okay, guys, we did something for good. And I think it's the same thing for Johnson & Johnson, using our size for good. And I make aware of this problem, and I think everybody is aware of it in the end. And that's why I reached with open arms, as I presented in 2020, the idea, okay, let's talk about recycling. Is it feasible? Let's check it out. Let's try to find the right partners. And in the first beginning, we are always also benefit from it, because we are still the only company who's doing recycling for medical device and its packaging, at least. And we reached open arms also in the hospital, as we presented this program in the first beginning. And it was not a big deal to convince these guys in UR to participate on this program.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the most pressing topics is to scale up all those processes. So, and since hospitals are very distributed in a huge area, how do you make it possible to reach scale?
In the first step, it's key to get as the most possible hospital you can reach in Germany, at least. No? Of course, the question is always, okay, how can we improve the processes? How can we streamline the processes? But that's the second task. In the first beginning, it's very important to get all the, at least university hospitals, that this is not only a small program or even a pilot, it must be the new normal. And of course, the more hospitals participate in this program, the more we can streamline the process in the end. And one challenge is, it was also our first beginning, okay, when if it works in Germany, why does it work in Netherlands? Or can we take also, can we also collect all the devices in Netherlands and bring them cross-border to Germany? And that's a big deal to do that. That's why it's a challenge always. If some another country would like to participate on this program, they need to find their own recycling partner locally. That's always a big challenge, to find the right partners in each country. That's why scaling is, it's easy to scaling in the dashboards and the reporting. It's not a big business. But in the end, it's always a challenge to find the right partners in each country.
Mm-hmm. So you need really to separate country-wise.
Unfortunately, yes.
The operators in each country. Okay, interesting. And are these resources returned then into the loop, or is it separated into other industries?
Yes, of course. We put it back into the loop locally. That's very important. We do not ship them to any other countries or abroad. It stays here locally in Germany. Of course, unfortunately, we are not allowed to reuse our own recycled material to make new medical products of it. That's another reason we can talk about later maybe. But with our recycling program, we avoid in the first step the incineration and the carbon emission which is generated by it doing it. And the second one, we can reuse, of course, the material. When you're talking about medical devices, and many reasons you have precious material inside, we can take it back into the loop, and maybe it's sold on the commodity market here locally, and then these kind of recycled material can be reused to make new products like bottles of shampoo or steel products, something like that.
Yeah, that's a very important point, I think, because the question how to use the materials again, I think, is also a question of how profitable is the topic itself when you think of purity of materials and all those things. But first, are there differences between the different countries? When you look at Germany with a strict regulation and other countries are maybe have other rules?
Yes, that's always the first one was, as I mentioned, to find the right recycling partner, because not every recycling company is willing to participate, because when you reach out to these kind of companies, say the first question is how many volume? And if you're presenting these less volumes in comparison to what they're managing each day, some maybe laugh. That's why that's the first challenge. And the second one is to find the right partners with the authorities in each country, because of course, we are all in the EU, each country, but in the end, each country is responsible for its own waste regulations, and there are a lot of difference between these countries. Italy, for example, is very strict. I also learned now that Spain is also very strict. That's depends on which country and which kind of people are working in which kind of authority and departments, and that makes it not easy to scale.
Would it be a big leap forward for all those circularity ambitions if regulation would be harmonized across whole Europe?
Yeah, of course. I think when we're thinking about the cross-border shipment of waste, that could be helpful. Maybe we have some good partners in the Netherlands. We have some great partners in UK. And the distance is not too long. Maybe it makes sense to streamline this process to work with one recycling company in UK or the Netherlands, where all the collected devices from UK and Germany, Switzerland is going to one partner. That would be very helpful, because as our partner Resourcify always mentioned, is that it's very hard to get the approval to do this. I remember one approval we asked for in Sweden and Sweden and Denmark. It took more than 1 year to get this approval doing that. And of course, it would be very helpful. And second, it would be very helpful to start our new process in Germany, because when we're talking about Netherlands, the recycling companies who are localized in Netherlands are allowed to decontaminate themselves on site. That's forbidden in Germany, unfortunately, yet. That would be very helpful to invite other suppliers, other competitors into this program, because that we are need to run the new 2.0 process, I call it, to invite other companies to join this program.
Mm. So you see regulation really as a limitation of circular transformation of business?
Unfortunately, yes. I think we have good regulation in place when we're talking about the supranational framework, like the EU Green Deal, taxonomy, something like that. That's great, top down. But in the end, you're faced with the local regulations, and sometimes they are not working together, and you would like to do what is the aim and the goal of the EU Green Deal, but you are are faced with limitations locally when you want to do that and to execute it, and that's what we are faced with, unfortunately, in Germany at least.
Yeah, are you seeing some steps toward harmonizing regulation? Is there anything planned in some countries? Maybe not only in Germany.
The other countries, I think, great ambitions are ongoing. I think in the Netherlands, when I look what is going on there, in Switzerland, I think also Denmark, I think maybe too. Germany, we have a lot of quite of good partners like you, Indeed, like our Zucker Green Networks, all the ambitions in the several hospitals ongoing. We all try to make this problem visible by doing it, but unfortunately, I have not the feeling that yet, at least, that there's a change going on. Let's cross fingers that will maybe happen in 2026. Let's see.
2026 is this year. Let's also talk about the future, Daniel. What's your vision for the program in 2030?
Oh, that's good. Quite good. It's quite simple to answer. That's recycling in each hospital is a new normal, not only for Johnson & Johnson, also for all the Star Alliance of Medtech companies, I call it. That it's a new normal that we also recycling and increase the recycling rates in the hospital. And it's a quite new normal.
And Star Alliance then means, what do you envision there?
Yeah, that we have all the big companies into place and we are already in touch with them. And I know that most of these companies are willing to participate. But as I mentioned, there are some regulations and some problems in place yet. But I'm very confident that we will solve this problem. But I think the feeling and the ambition to participate is there, is existing already there. And I hope that we can do our job in this year and next, and that it is in 2030, the new normal, that we are doing recycling in each hospital, please.
Nice. I do want to come back to the motivation of the companies that are a member of this initiative. Just to clarify what also Michael before was referring to. So the incentive to run such a program is basically what from a Johnson & Johnson side, from a commercial side. So how does it help Johnson & Johnson?
Okay. The first motivation was to doing something for good. But then always we go for profit company, of course. And then you need to answer who's paying for what. And that's why you always need to find a solution. And as we started as a pioneer by doing it, we have a unique selling proposition, how we call it. Yeah? And if a surgeon is unemotional, who's working, can each work with each device from competitors or from Johnson & Johnson, it is a big game changer for him. Okay, your device will be is going to be recycled in the end, then I decide me for your product. And that was very helpful in the beginning. It was a big driver. But of course, if something is, you need to pay for something, that's not always a good basement to scale very fast, rapidly fast. And that's why we changed and said, for all the long partners, good partners we are working very long time with, the hospitals, we offering the service for free. That's a game changer for us and is a good requirement, I would say, for scaling with other companies.
When you think back when we first met while doing this feasibility study in together to identify with other companies, what are the biggest main problems in reducing hospital waste, medical waste in hospitals? How do you think is the general ambition in the industry to solve those problems?
I think the ambition is there, except because when we are talking with each companies, when we're talking with our own suppliers, when we're talking about our customers, I think there's a big motivation in the market to change something. That's why it's not always hard to convince our customers when we present it. And I think the competitors are also looking for, because we are the first. And once you are as a big player, get one step further, the other need to follow. And that's why they're also keen and eager getting or to participate on this program very fast. And that's why we need this regulation shift and change that we can run at least at the first step a pilot with several competitors to demonstrate the value and the of this program. And then I hope that we can scale it very fast.
That's interesting. When you look in other industries, then there are examples where meanwhile in industries that are not that regulated and where there is no danger for the health of patients or workers, they already start using parts from competitors to combine the refurbished products again. And it reminds me, it's a kind of Frankenstein product at the end, but it looks like a very good designed new product, and it's all about standardization. And I think this is really a game changer, because then you can create the scale up in a much better, much more efficient processed way. And I think this is a quite optimistic scenario for the future.
Yeah, I think we need to do a lot of homework within the industry, the tech industry. But I think it's already happened. For instance, we are talking about in our organizations about how standardize the kind of method we are calculating our own carbon footprint for medical devices. Before you can present these data to customers, we need to standardize the method we are calculating. And that's already happened together with the Dean Deutsche Industrienorm here in Germany. And I hope it will end in the ISO in the end. Let's see. Of course, you need to work. You need to collaborate with your competitors on the market. You cannot do it on your own. That will not work in the end. You need to reach out your arms to other companies. Of course, we are in competition, but I think in the end, sustainability is not a factor for competition. I think now we need to work very close to find a good solution for our customers in the end and the environment.
Wonderful, Daniel. Let's wrap it up. So as a short answer, what makes this program irresistible for Johnson & Johnson?
Unfortunately, we are still unique as the first one, and it makes still unique that you get a report in the end what is inside the bin, so that you had a big motivation to see what is the difference why separating medical devices and why you're doing that.
Wonderful. Michael, you're familiar with this specific case, but also you've seen other examples from the medtech industry. Let's have a short reflection on the learnings. What does it mean for other companies in a similar but not exact and identical situation? So when does take back work in general?
I think in general, and also from what we heard from Daniel, we have mainly two parameters in that. The first one is the amount of material we can get. I heard in many different industries, it's always the same story. So as soon as you have a certain amount of material, the process after take back can be established in an industrial way, not manufactured. This is very important, the scale up possibility or opportunity that makes a business profitable. The second part is type of material you can get. For example, when you can get hands on aluminium or steel, this is very easy to reprocess and reintegrate into the production processes. When you think of plastics with those many different variants, it becomes even more complicated. And therefore, more and more companies look into complete components, because then you do not need to go to particle level, which is the case in recycling, but you can use the whole component, save value of manufacturing it, and remanufacture that. That would be the ideal scenario for the medtech company, if that would be allowed and possible. In some cases, when you think of heavy machinery like an
MRT
machine, this is a very established process since years. And when you can transfer that to even smaller devices, this would be a huge step forward.
That sounds pretty attractive. At the same time, there are some barriers. So what kind of barriers do we need to overcome?
As we discussed, in medtech, it is regulation. So because it is in Germany not allowed to disinfect these materials outside of the hospital to make it in a more scalable process, you need to do it on site. Even that is sometimes difficult to achieve, because the law at the moment requires, as soon as materials are have been in contact with the patient, it needs to be incinerated. What we did in the White Dot Initiative, which we created together with Johnson & Johnson, Philips and other companies, is that we now see that there is some weakening in the regulation, that this particular part will be now discussed during this and next year, that we can hopefully see that this part of regulation will change. But this is in the making, and we do not know if it is achieved at the end. But you see that to put energy into helping to adapt regulation to the needs of circular economy will open the door to create loops of materials, components, and establish new ways to reduce waste streams.
Yeah, and at the same time, already within the current regulatory situation, there are companies like Johnson & Johnson
starting and running a take back. And of course, there are other industries that might not be that much regulated. So the question there is a bit, why do companies do that? Or in a different way, how does take back contribute to business success?
I think it's more mainly about preserving value. So if you are able to establish a take back system and can not only recycle, which helps you to hopefully sell the recycled material for other industries. But if you think more into the future and you are able to rebuild devices, then you maybe need just 50% of the effort to remanufacture the device in comparison to create the new device. And even if you resell this with a discount, you will also have a chance to end with a better margin than with creating the new device. This is the case in other industries that are not that regulated. And the numbers of the refurbishment market are really telling. So since years, they grow with a double-digit rate, about 14%, depending on which industry you look at. And this was one surprising finding when we did some research about what are the main success factors of refurbishment in terms of circular economy, which we launched in February. And if we could establish that in the medtech industry as well, then we could prevent much of the clinical waste that is produced at the moment.
I would put that in the show notes. So if people who are interested want to look it up, they can do it there. And it kind of sounds that in your case, the take back is an enabler, not only for recycling, but also could then also be for other strategies like refurbishment or even remanufacturing.
Yeah, I think recycling is just the beginning of the journey. So we can learn how these take back systems work, how the incentives work, and then we can proceed and start creating the processes for the next levels.
Wonderful. Daniel, Michael, thanks for sharing your experience and providing your perspective, and all the best with reaching the vision, Daniel, you sketched. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Our second episode in this series about irresistible circular businesses in sponsoring partnership with Indeed Innovation. Indeed Innovation is the global design and innovation firm pioneering the circular economy and driving initiatives in medtech like the White Dot, which is about transforming medical waste into valuable resources. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this conversation here, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter, which you can find at www.circularity.fm. Do you wonder how 20 medtech leaders rank on circularity and what's actually driving circular revenue? Get Indeed Innovations Index report, which I will link from the show notes. In the next episode, Whirlpool will tell us how they operate their certified refurbishment program in North America. Until then, let's drive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.